Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Coming up on Stu Does America, Ami Horowitz is here to show us how little liberals know about tax rates and everything else. Elon Musk is going to be on SNL this weekend. We'll tell you how many tears are going to be shed by the leftist cast members. And are the rich paying their fair share in taxes? What is their fair share? Is there ever a fair amount of money that you're allowed to steal? And is it really sharing at all if you're just taking it? Let's find out and do Taxing the Rich.
Stu Does America.
Ah, yes, it's one of the all-time cries from the left. We need to tax the rich. Why won't they pay their fair share? Tax the rich. I guess it's better than eat the rich, which is what they used to go to all the time, and probably will be back to soon. Caitlyn Jenner, who is, of course, running for governor of California now. If you don't know, Caitlyn Jenner, very rich. A lot of money, a lot of cash in that Kardashian household. And all the people surrounding it in and out. If you're a Kardashian, you usually have some cash. That's kind of the way this works. Caitlyn Jenner, basically a Kardashian. So tons and tons of cash, lots and lots of rich friends, someone who's made tons and tons of money. Doesn't matter if Caitlyn Jenner is a trans person. Everyone on the left supposedly loves trans people and never would criticize them because they're breaking that ceiling. I know a glass ceiling for women. I guess it would also be a glass ceiling for Caitlyn. This would be the first female governor of California too, remember. One of the issues that's really funny to watch the left deal with is how to criticize someone like Caitlyn Jenner while remaining pro-trans. And this is the way they're going to do it, it seems. They're going to call her evil and rich. She had an interview with Sean Hannity where she basically was trying to explain how a lot of wealthy people are leaving the state of California. And when you're a Kardashian, when you're a Caitlyn Jenner, you have really, you have real world experience here, right? Because all your friends are super rich. And so she described a situation where I was talking to the guy across the tarmac there who has the other hangar. And he was moving his stuff out of his private jet hangar to move to Sedona because he was sick of seeing homeless people. Now, as a candidate, perhaps the phrasing may, maybe should be improved as we go forward. But the point here is obvious. It's true. People are leaving California because they consider it to be a disaster under Gavin Newsom. And they want to go somewhere where they can actually do things and maybe keep a little bit of their money. This is so normal. But it's such a typical attack from the left, the evil rich person. They will frame anybody as an evil rich person, largely to get, of course, at Republicans generally. I mean, they don't seem to mind their own rich people all that much. They seem to like their own rich people quite a bit, actually. Ask Harvey Weinstein. He was loved, adored throughout the community the entire time. And the question is always, why won't rich people pay their fair share? If you happen to be someone who's a Blaze subscriber, if you happen to be someone who is in tune with the news and looks at really nerdy government charts all the time, you might be one of those people that knows the facts about our tax system and how it works. But that is not common around the country. There was this thing that kind of went on for a very long time culturally, and it was always criticized. It was this idea of keeping up with the Joneses. You know, the next door, the Joneses next door, they got the nice car, they got the nice house, they've got the new TV. We need to get the stuff that they have. We need to keep up with them. We need to have the same stuff they have. And it was kind of a summary, basically, of envy, of jealousy. It was a negative phrase to describe someone who was reaching in life for the wrong things. Well, keeping up with the Joneses is still around. It's just been converted to income inequality. Now, if you want the same thing as Caitlyn Jenner, you're allowed to criticize Caitlyn Jenner because you're unequal when it comes to income. This is not a good development for our society. We're supposed to be focusing on other things completely. But we've gone from keeping up with the Joneses to income inequality to now equity. It's a bad conversion, and it's not something we should want to do. You know, you'll notice as the left talks about what the fair share is for the rich, very rarely do they actually come up with a number. It's really odd that they actually would be specific and find out. Coming up, we have Ami Horowitz. We're going to talk to him a little bit about one of his videos he did on tax rates. And he asked the question. He wanted to go out there and find out if people really knew what a fair share was. It's an amazing window into people who are canceling out your vote. Watch.
I'm Ami Horowitz, and the mantra of the left is that the rich don't pay their fair share in taxes. Let's go find out if that's true. Do you think the rich pay their fair share in taxes?
No, fuck no, dude.
Do the rich pay their fair share in taxes?
Absolutely fucking not. In America? In the United States, absolutely not.
Probably not fair if all things are considered.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
No, no chance.
No, absolutely not.
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, no.
Definitely not.
Not even close. Yeah.
No. No.
Oh, hell no.
No.
No. I don't think they pay their fair share of taxes at all.
Do you think the rich pay their fair share in taxes?
Do they even pay taxes at all?
You can't even calculate the extreme that the 1% has.
The problem with a lot of them is that they just would rather... They'd rather be dead than see poor people be rich or be well off.
I mean, I know people in America think of Gaddafi as a negative guy, but let's go back to Libya. Libya, free education, free electricity.
Gaddafi was slaughtering people in the streets.
He was slaughtering people in the streets.
So it's a six of this, it's half dozen the other.
I just think capitalism is stupid and it doesn't work. I mean, obviously, look at our country, it doesn't work.
How is it possible for billionaires to even exist in this country?
And you've got the most starving, suffering people on the in the richest country in the world.
Now, wait a second. You come from Zimbabwe. People are starving in Zimbabwe than here.
They sold me a lemon.
I just think people shouldn't even be able to make as much money as they do.
So you think there should be a cap on income?
Yes, fully.
What we're looking at is serfdom.
What percent should be paid by the top 1%?
Probably 60%.
70 or 80%.
I don't know.
75.
I think if they could kick it up to 75 to 80, that would be good, man.
Hit them up for 80%.
They need to be freaking taxed.
Well, what's wrong with 90%?
90% is, I like you. I love you, man. 90%. That's 90% is good.
95%.
Dude,
they can live on 5%.
I think they can live on 5%, man. I get where you're going with this, man. I totally agree.
Like 99% of their wealth.
Why should people with less money be paying more than billionaires when they literally don't have that money to pay in the first place?
Why do you think poor people pay more than rich people?
Because this country is a joke.
The poorest people are being milked more than the freaking rich.
So do you think that the poor pay a higher percentage of their income?
Yes.
Or the rich?
They do pay a higher percentage
the
of
poor.
Their income. Yeah, they do, yeah.
Oh, the lower class, definitely.
Pay more.
Yeah.
Lower income people.
Poor people.
So the 1% earn about 25% of all the income in America.
So well, there you go. If we're talking about fair share, then, you know, if you're bringing in 25% of the income, 25% of the taxes should also...
That would be fair.
Come, you know, I would think so, yeah.
And would you be surprised if I told you that the top 1% pay 40% of all taxes?
I would be surprised, yeah.
Would it surprise you if I said the rich, the 1%, pay 40% of all taxes in America?
Interesting. Would surprise me, yeah.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a little more fair than you might have thought.
Yeah.
What percent of income do you think the top 1% pay?
I think they're paying like freaking 2% of that.
I'm paying 27%.
What?
27%. What percent of their income do you think people at the 50% and below pay?
Probably higher than 27%. If it gets higher, the lower your income comes.
Wait, so what are the numbers?
I think it's probably over 50.
It's 4%.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
That sounds fair.
Man, yeah. I need to study up more on this, man. I'm not paying attention to actual numbers.
Would it surprise you if I said that the top 1% pay 27% of their income in taxes?
27%.
And the bottom 50% pay 4% of their income in taxes.
Really?
Does that surprise you?
Yes.
Does that seem more fair?
It would be pretty fair.
Oh, wow. Yes, I would. I didn't know that.
Is that surprising?
Yes.
Does that seem more fair?
Because I feel like it's, it would definitely seem fair.
Telling me that's a reality?
100%.
Wow. I'm shocked.
Seems like the bottom pay a little more.
Absolutely unbelievable. We'll talk to Ami Horowitz next. Whether it's work or play, a lot of us are going to be on the move again this summer. So my advice to you, take your Raycons with you. A pair of Raycon wireless earbuds in your ears can make all the difference. Get crisp, powerful beats at half the price of other premium audio brands. Raycons look great. They feel even better. They don't dangle down from your ear. They don't pop out way outside your ear. They fit just kind of like flat to your ear. They're really, really great to wear, and the sound is fantastic as well. They have a range of cool colors, and they have the customizable gel tips. Make sure they fit perfectly for you. Raycons are built to go wherever you go, and they have easy, seamless Bluetooth pairing that actually freaking works, which is a miracle to me. Listen up. Raycons offering 15% off all their products for listeners of this stupid show you happen to be watching. Make sure you check it out. Buyraycon.com. BUYRAYCON.com/stew. Buyraycon.com/stew. There you'll get 15% off your entire Raycon order. And it's a great deal if you want to grab a pair and a spare. 15% off at buyraycon.com/stew. Buyraycon.com/stew. Happy to welcome filmmaker Ami Horowitz back to the program, into the studio, I think in person for the first time.
First time
on this
in
show.
Person, yes. Yeah. You had that weird robot thing, yeah. Which nobody understood. My family, like, what is happening? Why is he, what is going on?
We have lots of things that people don't understand on this program. we just showed a good chunk of your video. It's an amazing, it's a shocking window. Because you think about, you know, we talk about these things all the time, but how are people going to win elections? And you realize that these people are just canceling out all of our votes. People who have no, I'm not making fun of them, but it's like there's no awareness of the topics that are leading people to vote. They don't know the facts behind it, and you expose that in an amazing way there.
Thanks. Look, the unfortunate part is that they believe it, right? So yeah. They really believe, like, you would think that a progressive tax system is something that we all understand how that works.
Yeah.
The rich pay more, the poor pay less. But they don't, which means we've lost this like ideological propaganda battle, right? Because
yes.
The left has been battling us with these lies for years, and it seems like they've won, at least with their own people, they've won that battle. The good news is that when they're confronted with facts and they're confronted with the truth, you would think they would back, oh, you're a liar, or I don't believe
right,
it, or
right.
It's baloney. But the truth is they didn't react that way. And it makes me feel positive in terms of how we can change things in that they see the numbers, they see the facts, and they do start to kind of engage and rethink their position. So it's a really positive that if we're able to get to them, we will win that battle. But the challenge is, how do we leave our little bubbles that we're all in, right? The right, we're in our own bubbles too, let's be honest,
sure. Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure.
And so is the left, and we're not able to pierce those bubbles. One of the things I'm most proud of is that a significant portion of my audience are left or left of center.
Mm-hmm.
Not a majority. Mm-hmm. Probably a third.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, it is. I think for us it is, and that's been an area of focus of mine for a while. And so if we're able to pierce those bubbles with the truth, I think we win.
Yeah, because there's some issues where, we could disagree on what the tax rate should be. But like if you started that sort of zero base where it's like, what should the tax rate be? I think most people would actually think it should be lower than it is now. I remember there's a poll a while ago where they asked people what should the actual tax rate be? And a majority of people had it lower than the current rate at the time. This is going back a few years now. But you see here, like when they're stunned that this is happening. And to your point on propaganda, is it a failure of the media? right? Where they are just constantly washing people with this thought that the rich get away with everything and they're the ones that are getting screwed. Or is it a fault of conservatives and the right who just can't seem to communicate these points?
Well, it's not a failure of the media. It's a success of the media, right? The media has an ideological bent, and they've been very successful at transmitting that perspective to their audience. Forget about, let's first agree on what it should be. Let's first agree on what it is.
Yeah.
They don't even know what it is,
That's right?
That's the problem, is that they look at me and they say, of course the poor pay more than the rich. I'm like, what planet are you guys on?
Yeah.
That's so far from the truth that put aside your ideological perspective, let's at least agree on what the reality is.
Yeah.
They're living in an alternate universe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. And I think that's, you know, it's one of the things you find in polling, I think, over and over and over again. Reason used to do a really good job. I don't know how much of this they're doing these days, but they had a polling division and they would do polls, but they would always have follow-up questions on it, which I loved. And it would be stuff like, you know, do you think we should fix global warming? And of course, like, you know, it's like 73% of people say yes. What if it's going to cost you $100 a month? It's like 8% say yes.
Right.
And it's going to cost way more than $100 a month.
Right.
Right. As soon as people have an idea what these things cost, and it's not just a benefit analysis. I want a cost benefit analysis. It's always just a benefit analysis by the media. Well, we could fix all these things. Well, of course you can in theory, but like it's really expensive. When you know the cost of it, most people look and they say, well, that doesn't sound like it's worth it.
The problem is that people have no. Why do communism exist? Right? Mm-hmm. Why do we have it as a major economic force in our world? Because in theory, it sounded great for a lot of people.
Yeah,
what?
Right.
I don't. You know, I could. Everybody will have the same. There will be no differences between wealth. I'd love that. I don't have to work as hard. I could be lazy. Mm-hmm. Sure. But when confronted with reality, you end up in gulags.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that's the gulf. That's the delta between theory and reality, mm-hmm. which is like awesomeness and gulags. That's the difference between
it. It's a pretty big gap there. It's a big gap. Let me go to specifics on your video here. There's a couple people I want to call out. Number one, woman who you talked to throughout the video, and she's convinced that capitalism doesn't work. She even says that, like, oh, obviously capitalism doesn't work. Look at this country. It's like, well, I would say, look at this country. Capitalism works, right?
Course,
like, I mean, that's how I would look at it. But I don't know what country they think is better than this, at what time in human history is better. But the American people generally are just have this really negative feeling about capitalism.
Most Americans do not feel this way.
That's good.
And I want to differentiate between, and it's always important, between liberals mm-hmm. and the left.
Yes.
Right? There's a distinction. Mm-hmm. Liberals are people who are Democrats who will disagree on tax policy.
Sure.
Right? That's fine. Leftists are the people who are disgusted by this country.
Yeah.
Who are self-hating mm-hmm. Americans. Now, the problem is that when you look at people left of center, a growing percentage of them are becoming the left, right? The Nancy Pelosi's are becoming co-opted by the AOC's and Rashida Tlaib, right? Mm-hmm. So the problem is they're growing, but they're still a minority of anything on the left of the center.
That's why Biden sold himself that way in the primary, right? As a guy he sold himself as a moderate in some ways. He hasn't governed that way, and once he got into the general, I don't think he really performed that way. But he was able to kind of stay in the race early on, largely because he was seen at least as the moderate.
I have to say,
it's really frustrating.
I am honestly shocked, Mm. And some people look at me and say, "Well, I can't believe you're shocked that Biden is governing the way he is." I really am.
Really?
Yes. I thought he was going to be a traditional Democrat, mm-hmm. He was going to bring some sanity back to his party.
Mm.
And boy, was I wrong.
Look, so far, not
when
so good.
AOC says he's doing a great job, what does that tell you, Stu?
What does that tell you? That's not good.
There's a problem here.
It really is very, very strange. Because I think you could make that argument. He's kind of existed at the middle of his party
throughout
his whole career.
Let's be honest. He really has.
Wherever it's moved, he's moved with it and kind of stayed in the middle of his party. So when they have had left-wing moments, he's been more left. But I guess maybe this is the answer, is that the party is so far left. Because you brought up liberals versus leftists. Who would you name that's a liberal right now? I mean, there might be a few of them in our government, but like most of them sound a lot like leftists these days.
I'm not even talking about like a Joe Manchin. Like I don't, like he's really more center right, frankly. And forget the Blue Dogs. I mean, look, I would have looked at Nancy Pelosi and said a traditional liberal Democrat. She has, and I think for the most part, she still is.
She still fights with AOC. And
but
such.
She does start to move and you know, some of her policies tend to move toward. Look, Joe Biden, I would have said it, but he's governing as a hard leftist.
That's crazy.
It's disturbing. But it's disturbing on one end.
Yeah.
If from a pure political perspective, which is not good for the country, but from a pure political perspective, it's good for Republicans.
Yeah.
In the short term, it's damaging for the country in the long term. But in the short term, if the Republicans can't win back the Congress and the Senate in 2 years, they should all be fired.
Yeah.
They should all be fired.
I will say, I said basically the same thing before the Georgia elections. If they can't win one of these two races, and then...
Oh, that's bad news.
Whole other story. Okay, before you go, I wanted to go to this guy from Zimbabwe.
Yes. Oh, he's...
I mean, he might have been the star of the show here.
He was.
Because here's a guy who's seen the worst that basically government and humanity can do in Zimbabwe, the terrible tragedy there for a very long time. And he was... completely stunned. I mean, he has a real conversion there.
It's in real time. You see it in real. It's the great thing about this video is you see them all change their minds in real time.
Yeah.
He was the hardest of the hardest.
Yeah.
Right. And even though he was an immigrant, which was surprising to me, because most immigrants from Africa really appreciate America. Mm-hmm. But he was really hatred of America and what America stands for and the taxes. And he was completely adamant.
Yeah.
And he just flipped.
Yeah.
It was amazing to watch.
As soon as he saw this, because you walk with him through that, because he thinks you're on his side.
Right,
you
know, right.
He's
right.
Like, 99%. Right. Yeah, I like where you're going
love it,
on this.
I love it, man.
And by, a couple of minutes later, he's completely changed. Facts, sometimes I feel like they don't matter, but they do.
They do.
They
really do. They really do. And they really are powerful. Mm. They really are powerful if you can package them in the right way.
Yeah. So you've done that with this video, and you do it all the time. Where do people go to find your videos and see all your stuff?
They can go to my YouTube, my Instagram, all the social media overlords.
Yes.
who have deigned for the moment to allow me to exist. Thank you. Well, thank you, sirs.
We are taping this, so by the time it airs, they may have thrown you off. But so far, you're still on it. Ami Horowitz, great to see you, man. And thanks so much for doing this.
It's a pleasure.
I appreciate it. All right. Back in a second. All right, this is the weekend for Elon Musk on Saturday Night Live. Lots of people are pissed off about it. Their writers are tweeting things, saying that they don't want to do, because he wrote it. Let's find out how live Saturday Night Live really is. Kind of, he wants to make it unpredictable. Maybe he flashes a Dogecoin symbol up or something in the middle of the show. People are, what the F does this even mean? The only CEO, this joke is just tough. The only CEO I want to do a sketch with is Sherry E. O'Terry, former. I hope that was meant to be a bomb, like an intentional bomb joke. But either way, they're not happy necessarily about that. This is while SpaceX is now saying their Starlink satellite internet service is now saying they have 500,000 people who have signed up for this. It's you could see the satellites in the sky sometimes. I thought it was freaking Santa Claus. I did. It looked like Santa Claus crossing the sky. It was crazy. It's this long line of these little dots, and they don't, it's not like shooting stars where they'll go and fade. They're satellites. They just go around the sky. It looks just like Santa Claus. Your kids will love it. I'm one of the subscribers for Starlink, although they say just paying for it doesn't mean you're going to get it. So I don't know if that means exactly. We'll learn more later on. And just give you a sign of the times, Elon-wise. Earlier today, I just said, hey, what is Dogecoin at? And someone actually yelled, 61! There's just people walking around checking Dogecoin all the time. Well, there's a buildup of Dogecoin. We're up pretty high, higher than anyone could have ever thought possible because of Elon's potential SNL mention this weekend. Watch the show and just become a billionaire with me. We'll see you then. The question is, does Built Bar take Dogecoin? I don't think they do. And if they don't, if I can't pay with Dogecoin, well, then I don't. Well, yes, I do want them. Okay, Built Bars are awesome. Why? Because they're actually healthy. My wife is actually healthy, in shape, eats them all the time. Why? Because they taste great. They are low protein or high protein, high fiber, low calorie, low carb. It's awesome. Built bars are great. There's a bunch of flavors. I have the flavor card right over here. Here's some. Coconut almond, coconut, double chocolate, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, salted caramel, raspberry, cherry barcia, and cookies and cream. All available, and many, many more. They're introducing new ones all the time. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code Stu15. BuiltBar.com. Promo code is Stu15. If you haven't tried a Built Bar yet, you got to get on board with this. You're going to love it. BuiltBar.com, and it's Stu15 for 15% off your order. So happy to welcome back to the studio Matt Kibbe. He's the president of Free the People and, of course, host of Blaze TV's Kibbe on Liberty. Matt, how are you?
Yeah, good to see you again.
You're in town. You have a documentary?
Yes. So Free the People has produced a documentary on restorative justice called How to Love Your Enemy. Hmm. And we are showing it live with real people in a theater.
What?
In Bryan, Texas.
Like, I
had to come all the way to Texas to do this. But, you know, restorative justice is the idea that the victim should be made whole instead of this amorphous notion of paying a debt to society. So in some ways, it's a very conservative and libertarian idea, but it's also something that is attractive to people on the left that see sort of the cycle of recidivism. And it's a way for young people that make a really bad mistake to take ownership of it and get their lives together. So we think it's a really interesting idea.
That does sound really interesting. Yeah, I got to check this out. And this is you're debuting in a theater now, and is it going to be available everywhere?
It is. You can find it on YouTube or our website at freethepeople.org.
Awesome.
And you can see How to Love Your Enemy.
I got to check it out. Okay, so let me start here because we're talking about being in a movie theater, which is apparently allowed here in Texas. Who knew? It's strange to people. I have friends who live up north, and they come down here every once in a while to visit. No one goes the other way right now. Only people from the north come down here to visit.
Yeah.
But when they get here, they're stunned by life. They don't understand what this world is that we see. You can go into movie theaters. You can go into restaurants. You can live pretty much, I would say, pretty much at this point, a normal life.
Yeah.
That is going to affect our country, especially when it's split, when half of the country is able to live like that and half isn't.
I was just in Florida, and you have that same vibe where people actually say hi to you when you walk past them on the street, and they smile, and you can see their face because they're not all masked up. And I worry that we are becoming kind of an us versus them, because I still live in Washington, D.C., which has had, you know, everyone pays attention to California and Michigan and some other places, but D.C. has been as authoritarian as anywhere. And I just read an article yesterday about restaurants and people that working at restaurants, and the subtext of all of it was the people that run these establishments, and particularly the people that work there, they don't really like their customers anymore. They view them as the enemy, or at least something like, to be discouraged or feared.
Like a virus, right?
Yeah.
They view them as a virus.
Right. Yeah. And that to me is so corrosive. Like, if we're afraid to be near each other, if we're actually afraid to have customers, then I think the government is winning, because they want those people not to be free and working for themselves and controlling their own livelihoods. They want them to be wanting government assistance in order to survive.
Yeah. There's something very fundamental about the human experience that has just been eliminated, too. I mean, my wife was in, I think it was Lowe's the other day, and she came home and she was telling me, I have the best story. And she was telling me this story about this nice conversation she had with this guy that she, you know, who worked at the nearby AutoZone, and they had a great conversation just talking about life and everything. And she was like lit up, like, and it was like that. It was because she's a very social person, and she really has missed that over the past year, even though she's had more interaction than probably most in this country.
Yeah.
You know, I could sit at home and never probably go outside ever again and not really care. But this is her life, and this is really important to her. And American society as a whole has completely eliminated this, and we're just supposed to kind of roll with it. It's got to have effects.
Yeah, and I'm the most socially distant person perhaps in America. I'm happy to sit at home with my cats and have a conversation with them. Mm-hmm. But last year, even me, the guy that wants to be alone, I flew to Alaska to see a concert. I drove from Washington, D.C. to Iowa to drink a beer at a pub, and Iowa was one of the places, you know, one of the red states that was more free.
Yeah.
I think the things that we do together are how we actually figure out how to cooperate and get along with each other for all of our differences, and going to a concert, going to the movies, going out to dinner, going to get a beer at a pub. These are how we learn to not only put up with each other, but to respect each other. When you shut that off, you get a lot of anger and distrust and people just fighting with each other.
What's the name of your documentary again?
How to Love Your Enemy.
How to Love Your Enemy. Yeah. And it really does tie in here because, you know, there's that. It's been used a lot to criticize social media, where people who are on social media are yelling out there. They're typing in their excuses. They're, you know, behind an anonymous wall, and they're angry, and they're accusing people of things, and all that. And we all kind of know that's happening online. I wonder how much that's going to leak into how much is leaking into American society now, because if you don't have interactions with anyone, you don't have those softening experiences. Everyone to you is this like example of the worst person you can think of with that opinion. And that, I feel like, is adding to the division here.
Yeah. There was another article that showed up in our local media in Washington, D.C., where Democrats who had been vaccinated and would be perfectly comfortable not wearing a mask outside are still masking because they don't want to be viewed as being with those other guys.
Yeah.
The right, the conservatives, the Republicans.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? This is like cultural warfare. And I think we all need to figure out a way to sort of bridge that divide a little bit, however that is. But, you know, masking forever is not the answer.
No, but I will say what you just talked about happens on both sides. Because, you know, I'm much more around conservatives, generally speaking. My wife is the number one anti-mask activist in America, basically. And, you know, she gets pissed off when she sees a family or someone walking outside with a mask on. She's like, oh, look at this idiot. She's wearing his mask.
Yeah.
Now, she's totally right on the science on this side. Yeah. You know, she's totally right. But there is that sense of like it's become this weird team sport. And now everyone's wearing the jersey. Yeah. Right. Like now it's like you're walking down the street and there's some liberal walking past you. You don't know. Right. Now, you know, now there's visible signs of this everywhere. And it's just turning into just a weird place to be.
I had a friend who is very much on my side on this, but he has some immune issues and he is going to wear his mask. He's going to be at something called Pork Fest, which is a gathering of libertarians in New Hampshire. And he had to explain to all of us, I have to wear my mask because I have these issues. And you have that on both sides where there are good reasons to wear a mask. And there are people that probably should, even if it makes them feel good. But on the other hand, there are people that can't wear masks, and those people are being demonized.
Yep.
And I'm like, maybe not judge people. And this all goes down to like the government mandating these things, right?
Yeah. Yes.
If we had been focused on local decisions and people making up their own mind, all of this hostility would not exist in the first place because everyone would have decided for themselves what sort of risk preferences they had in the first place.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because like we have, you know, people around here who really no fans of the vaccine whatsoever. I happen to be the most pro-vaccine person in America. And I can talk to them about this really comfortably. Mm-hmm. Why? Because our answers are both freedom. I should be able to take it. You should be able to say no to it.
Right.
Like that's seemingly a crazy idea in this society today. And the government wants to implement these things. They're trying to, you know, they're trying to do it. They're trying to do it with the vaccine passports. They're trying to implement all these things. This doesn't feel like America to me, though.
Yeah. I mean, I have not been vaccinated yet. And normally I probably would have been, although I've never had a flu vaccine shot. Mm-hmm. But the bum rush from the government and the coercive way that they're forcing us to do this. And I was actually considering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and then they pulled it off the market. And
right.
I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Right.
Like, what's the message here?
Makes me want to take it more oddly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And maybe like if the one that the FDA is worried about is probably the one I want the most, right?
Yeah.
Because I know that the FDA is not about science, it's about politics. And the reason they pulled it off the market is their natural risk aversion. They're okay if people die because they don't have access to drugs, but they're not okay if they approve something that turned out to be problematic. And
that's crazy.
That means that they're worthless as a public safety guide to anything.
Yeah, no, 100% true. We're seeing now like this, because we've talked mostly about like human interaction here as it relates to this, and there's a lot there. But it's also what the government is going to use this crisis for. You know, it's been a really tough time. There've been really bad things that have happened, but that's never an excuse for a government to grab more power. They're fine using a crisis. They never want to let it go to waste. And we're seeing government grow in ways that even I, as a person who hates big government and is afraid of big spending and power from Washington, even I'm shocked by at times.
Yeah, it's a diversion. There's a reading assignment for everyone watching. There's a classic libertarian book called Crisis and Leviathan by Robert Higgs. Hmm. And he talks about the history of the United States and how it was that an economic crisis or a war created a ratchet effect where government always sort of winds people up. They create a crisis, they grow the government, and it never goes back down afterwards. And right now, under COVID, the fear that I think big government advocates have always been wanted, like they tried to convince us that the planet was going to blow up. Nobody bought into that. But now there's a real pandemic and people are genuinely afraid of this thing. Biden keeps feeding those fears. And the ratchet effect of government is the biggest we've seen, I think, since World War II.
Yeah.
It's really breathtaking. The ratio, nobody cares, but the ratio of debt to GDP, it's worse than Greece right now.
Yeah. Well, this is a key point. As you mentioned, nobody cares.
Right.
I care. I know you care. I know many in the audience care. However, not as many in the audience as I would like, and
right.
not as many on the right as I would like. And this has been something that's really, it's made me incredibly nervous. Now, I can understand some of the actions taken last year in particular because the government was shutting down all these businesses, and I can understand it, even though it makes me very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We've obviously long blown by what was rational when it comes to trillions of dollars of spending in this situation. But we do have a situation where we have one party who has always wanted to spend more money, another one that will at least fake that they want to spend less. But they've given up even the fake now. I mean, we are at a point where there isn't an opposition party when it comes to spending. And that makes me incredibly nervous.
Yeah, they're almost in a bidding war where each of them has spending priorities. And the compromise appears to be, well, let's just spend on all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been happening since the Tea Party.
That's a terrible compromise.
It used to be a trade-off, right?
Yeah.
They used to fight.
Yeah.
It used to be called guns versus butter, right?
And, right.
And the Democrats wanted more social spending and the Republicans wanted more defense spending.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere after the Republicans sort of broke the spirit of the Tea Party, it's now just spending on everything.
Yeah.
And it's these massive omnibus bills. And that was happening even before COVID. But now, like, here's a trillion. Oh, we got away with that. Here's 2 trillion. Let's see if that flies. Oh, and by the way, everything is infrastructure now.
Yeah.
And that's going to be 3 trillion.
Yeah. And like, you know, the Democrats are like, well, we're going to spend $3 trillion. And the Republicans come back and we're like, no way, you're crazy. 2.
Yeah.
And it's like, trillion shouldn't even be mentioned in this conversation. How much of this is a function of the Republican Party sort of turning from what they were under, let's say, Reagan, to really what is seemingly now a Trump party? I mean, Trump did some good things, and I've said many good things about the stuff he's done.
Yeah.
But like, spending was not a priority for Donald Trump. He never really ran on a guy who was going to limit government spending. And now it seems like Republicans say, like, this is a free lane now. Our voters don't care about it. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah, I think there has been a fundamental shift in the priorities of the Republican Party and maybe the conservative movement. I don't know. All my conservative friends still worry about the debt.
Yeah, yeah.
But we sort of can meet in a very small place. and that's concerning. And, you know, people are always coming to me and said, we need a new Tea Party. We got to start something. And I'm like, the problem with that is so few Republicans have credibility on fiscal responsibility.
Mm.
I can probably count them on one hand, that the guys that go down to the Senate floor and try to block these things.
Yeah.
It's worrisome to me because going back to that ratchet effect, like the new normal will be government at, I don't know what it is now. Like if we're, you know, the average always was about 20% of GDP, mm-hmm. federal government to the economy. It's surely much higher than that now. and it's hard to get back. Because once you create these programs, you create constituencies. Like there's always a cabal of institutions and special interests that defend the things once you start spending on them.
Yeah, and so many of these plans have been 10-year plans where those trillions of dollars are spread out over 10 years. You know, people are going to get used to it in 10 years. They get used to it really fast. Before we go, you mentioned you're going to New Hampshire coming up.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by the Free State Project thing there. Now, I remember this launching back in the day, and it was kind of seemed like a cool idea. A bunch of libertarians move to a smaller state that kind of has freedom leaning anyway, and kind of get involved in government. And then I thought it kind of like it was a big thing and it kind of went away. But it is kind of happening in New Hampshire, isn't it?
So two things that are interesting is there are a number of small government conservatives / libertarians that have gotten elected to the state legislature in New Hampshire. And they're starting to have an impact there, like substantial number. And the state legislature is massive, so it's easier to get elected. And Porkfest this year, for the first time, I think, ever, is sold out. They've actually, they have a capacity problem. And I think it's a perfect storm of things where people are probably thinking it's time to get out of this horrible blue state that is preventing me from even going outside with my children to the playground.
Yeah.
But it's also like I think it's an interesting experiment. Like, could we actually create a culture of liberty in a small state? It's got a fairly small population, so I'm bullish on the Free State Project as one sort of experiment as to how to do that. Because all of the bad ideas that we see in D.C. right now started in some bad state. Socialized medicine started in Vermont, I believe. Mm-hmm. And the left has gotten this right that, you know, we're supposedly the localists, but the left started from the bottom up. And I think New Hampshire's perhaps one of those experiments to see if you can't create a culture of liberty, which would have political implications afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing to watch. I mean, look, we need somebody who's arguing for smaller government somewhere. Matt Kibbe, he's doing it all the time. President of Free the People and host of Blaze TV's Kibbe on Liberty. BlazeTV.com/Stu is the place to go to sign up for Blaze TV. You save $10 with the promo code Stu. That's how they know you like this stupid show. But you can watch all of our shows for one price. And Kibbe on Liberty, big part of that. Matt, thanks so much.
Good talking to you.
All right, back in a second. Thank you for making to the final break of the show. You know, only cool kids make it this late in the program. We do appreciate it. Make sure to follow me over at my Instagram page, at Stu Does America. There, you can get the link in the bio. It takes you to everything. All the social links, all the merch links, all the, you know, show links. Everything you need is right there for you all the time. You've got the Nancy Pelosi pens that are still in stock. We've got Andrew Cuomo is awful mugs and t-shirts and all the fun things that you need to have. Also, I will mention Blaze TV. You know, we keep talking about, you got to do something. We can't just sit around and talk about this stuff. We've got to do something. Well, it struck me the other day that was Glenn, like, what, 10 years ago now? He's like, I got to do something. I can't just sit here talking about stuff. We need to create a media company for real conservatives to be able to come together and make a difference. And that's what the Blaze TV thing is that you're watching. You know, I mean, this is doing something. This is what it is. And we really appreciate you being a part of it. I know that there's so many great hosts here on Blaze TV. The subscription includes all of them. BlazeTV.com/Stu. Promo code is Stu. You'll save $10. We do really appreciate it, even if you're watching on YouTube or maybe you're over on Pluto TV. I was watching on Pluto TV the other night. It looks great. Looks fantastic on Pluto as well. So anywhere you can check it out, we really do appreciate it. Before we go, we're learning now that lightning may wash pollution out of the air with a chemical dubbed the detergent of the atmosphere. Scientists have demonstrated lightning bolts and less visible electric charges produce large amounts of oxidizing elements, and they break down greenhouse gases. Pretty great. Great news. And also, lightning bolts can fuel your flux capacitor and bring you back to 1955.